stories don't define you. How you tell them will.
Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker at Elkins Consulting. In my work with coaching clients, I guide people to improve their communication using storytelling as the foundation of our work together. What I've realized over years of coaching and podcasting is that the majority of people don't realize the impact of the stories they share on their internal messages and on the people they're sharing them with. My work with leaders and people who aspire to be leaders follows a similar path to the interviews on my podcast, uncovering pivotal moments in their lives and learning how to share them to connect more authentically with others, to make their presentations and speaking more engaging, to reveal patterns that have kept them stuck or move them forward, and to improve their relationships at work and at home. When you're ready to get started collecting your own stories, my book, Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will, is available in all the regular places, and the audiobook version is now available on Google Play and on my website, elkinsconsulting.com. As a special bonus for listeners, the audiobook includes two songs recorded by my band, Spare Change, in my living room in Montana. Keep an eye out for announcements through LinkedIn and via my Elkins Consulting Facebook and Instagram pages, or visit my website, elkinsconsulting.com, to learn more. Also on my website is a free podcast interview checklist. It's available to download to make sure you make the most of your next podcast interview. Well, today I'd love to welcome my podcast guest, Sarah Johnston. We met on LinkedIn a couple years ago, I believe, and then shared some emails back and forth after Vincent Famvan's Hope Summit early in the pandemic in March. And ever since then, I've known to get her on the podcast, Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. Thanks for joining me, Sarah.
It's really an honor to be here. I love your book and I love the content that you put out. And so this is a really special conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. So the way that I always love to start these conversations is to ask you to share something about yourself that most people might not know about you, something that wouldn't be on LinkedIn or on your bio or resume. And the reason I ask this is so that our listeners get a little glimpse into who you are beside your work. So give a little context for what you do. What do you think? Do you have something you can share?
I'll give you one that I don't think a lot of people know about me. I mean, people that know me in real life know this, but most people on LinkedIn don't know that I grew up in a small town, and by small, under 20,000. And I actually went to high school with at the same high school as Honey Boo Boo's mom, if that gives you any context into the high school situation that I was a part of. And I think that that really defines a lot of who I am, because I saw just like a really close-knit community. And I saw how people really take care of each other. And I was known then, you know, back in school, elementary school, middle school, and high school, I was known. People knew me and I was really cared for. And as I've grown and as I've went to college and I've lived as an adult, I've wanted that same feeling of knownness and I've sought that out. And so people often joke, you know, who knew me back in college, they're like, you were that girl that knew every single person in that thousand person dorm. That's always been a big part of my story, is I want to know everybody. I want to know everybody's story because I was so known as a kid.
Oh, I love that. Wow. So when you say under 20,000, that's familiar to me because I live in Montana.
Yeah.
And when I moved from Washington, D.C. to Montana 21 years ago, a few years later, I started working for a state agency. And one of my colleagues grew up in a town called Conrad, Montana, which is a few hundred people. Mm-hmm. And we'd be driving across the state because I was a compliance officer and she was a trainer on this federal grant. And I would say something about Helena, which is where I live, which is 30,000 plus, maybe 30,000 in the surrounding area in the county. And I would call Helena a small town. I'd be like, well, yeah, Helena is such a small town. And she'd say, Sarah, your DC is showing. Helena is not a small town. I'm like, wow. So 20,000. So where was that?
I grew up in Middle Georgia. I don't think most of your listeners would know Griffin, Georgia, but it's near Macon, which is a more mid-sized community in Georgia.
Right. Wow. So where did you go to school where there were 1,000 people in the dorm and you knew everybody?
I went to the University of Georgia, which was the state school.
Oh, that's a big school too.
It is. It's one of the biggest state schools. And I just remember like just the energy of my first week on campus and feeling so excited to be around so many new people because I'm an extrovert. I love energy. I love feeding off of people's energy. And it was like my whole world opened up to me the first week that I was on that big campus.
So it wasn't intimidating coming from this little tiny town and a graduating class of what, 50 people, 200, maybe?
200 people. You know, I had gone to summer camp every year as a kid, and I think summer camp experiences are so good for high school students to feel just independent and be able to make new friends and be kind of set aside in a place where you know no one. And so I thrived in summer camp experiences, and going off to college was like one big summer camp for an entire freshman year. And so for me as an extrovert, it was a lot of fun.
That's so funny. Summer camp experience. That is the opposite of from a small school to a huge school. I know that around here in this small town, there are a few small elementary schools still where you know all 40 of the kids in your grade, which is two classrooms. And then they go to this middle school that has hundreds of kids. It's teeming with sixth graders, seventh graders, eighth graders. And a lot of the kids really struggle with this sense of anonymity. But that wasn't your problem at all. You were like thrilled to have, and it wasn't anonymity for you. That's so fascinating. So did you take the StrengthsFinder assessment? Have you taken that?
I did. And my number one is Includer, which might explain like I.
And then there's Woo way up there somewhere.
Yeah, Woo and Includer. I think Woo's my number three and Achiever's my number two. But, you know, I genuinely get along with most people and really enjoy learning about most people. And so I think Includer is a good fit for me.
That totally makes sense. And for our listeners, if you're unfamiliar, someone strong in the Includer talent is, well, Sarah just described a perfect explanation where the Woo is winning others over. So that's really the charm, the charisma. The Includer is somebody who really feels compelled to be inclusive. So somebody who walks into a room that looks uncomfortable, an Includer will immediately bring them into their circle and introduce them and do whatever they can to make that person feel comfortable and included.
Yeah, I'd say that strength has pros and cons. I've learned as an adult, if I'm at a play group, I have young kids, and if I'm at a play group and there's a mom at the playground who is by themselves, I always feel compelled to go introduce myself and invite them in. But sometimes, if somebody is having a really in-depth conversation with me, I think it's always best to have that really private conversation in private because I can be distracted if I see somebody who's left out or by themselves.
That distraction and then disappointment that you can't be there.
That I can't help them, that I can't bring them in.
Right. I think where I've seen Includer get people into trouble is at work when they feel compelled to copy everyone on an email just to make sure no one feels left out. And then you end up not being able to make a decision because you have too many voices and some that shouldn't have been included in the first place because they don't really. Anyway, yeah. So it can be as the StrengthsFinder training would go in the basement of your strengths sometimes when that happens. Tell us a story of something meaningful that happened as an introduction to what you do for our listeners.
So I'm a job search coach and job search strategist. And one of my most meaningful client interactions was with a guy, and I'm just going to call him Bill. His name isn't Bill, but just to protect his identity, I'll call him Bill. Bill was around my age, really nice guy, had a sweet wife, and their life was on pause because he went to a state college and then went to med school, but he made the choice to go to med school in the Caribbean. And it is so difficult to match a US-based residency if you choose to go to med school in the Caribbean. And I don't think he had all the information to make the wise decision when he chose the path that he did to go to a Caribbean med school. And they accrued a lot of debt, and he had tried to match into a US-based residency, not once, not twice, but he was on his third round and he wasn't successful. And he actually called me. He actually found my name. He did a Google search for resume writers and he found me, and he wanted me to help him write a resume so that he could be a med tech. And he was going to quit trying to be a physician and he was going to be a med tech. And I got on the phone with him and we talked, and I said, "That's not your dream, is it? You don't really want to be a med tech. You're just doing this because you're trying to find a path out." And he said, "Yeah, but this is not the, I've tried. I can't be a doctor. I can't enter the profession. They've already said no twice. There's no way I'm going to get in the third round." And so we talked on the phone and we talked about what he'd been doing. And then I got off, as we ended the call, I said, "Listen, I know you don't know me and this is your choice. You have to decide how hard, how much you want this. But if this is your dream and you've got all these years invested in this and all this money invested in this, and this is what you really want, I think you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your wife to give this one more go. And you have to give everything you can to achieving this." I said, "How bad do you want it?" And he said, "Well, I think I want it really bad. I just don't think it's possible." And I said, "Well, I think it is." I said, "And I'll help you. I will be your accountability partner, and we will guerrilla warfare this. We will make this happen." And I helped him get a really nice personal statement written and had somebody look over it, had a couple physicians look over it, and really thought through his job search strategy. Long story short, he ended up getting 3 interviews. And this is the very first time that he'd actually gotten an interview for a residency spot. And he worked so hard to prepare and had a lot of people advocating for him, a lot of people who were in his circle. And he ended up matching into a family medicine residency position. And he's now a third year family medicine resident. He's about to get his first big job. And it was just like one of the crowning moments of my entire like profession as a career coach, is helping this guy meet his dreams. And I get a text message from him every couple months just telling me how grateful he is that he's a doctor. And it's just been a really special relationship that I've got to continue to have.
Oh my gosh, I just got a chill. That's so amazing. What a wonderful story. It feels familiar to me somehow. I think that we might have talked about that at one point earlier in one of our conversations. And wow. It's one of those moments when he called you to tell you he got 3 interviews. Did he call you for each one, or did he call you and say, "I just had an interview"?
Like daily at this point, like in the okay. Like months before match, I was so invested in him and invested in his story that this was a texting relationship. But he has given back to so many people. Like, he doesn't take his situation for granted, and he recognizes how lucky he is. And so he now has his heart for people like him with a story like his, and he's paying it forward. And in fact, there's a guy right now that I'm working with, thanks to him, who similar story, came from India, has spent 3 years in the US doing volunteer work and working in a lab, and way, way talented, incredibly overqualified, but just hasn't had the money, to be honest, to position himself for a residency spot. And he's got 2 interviews, and I'm really hopeful that in March 13th, he'll get a spot this year.
Wow. Yep. You know, I think there's something so important in that, in what you just talked about, that paying it forward once something shifts in your life and you're able to do what you want to do, being able to pay it forward, I think is a huge part of that, understanding that you did something that was kind of extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. That's awesome. I love hearing that. I know there are so many people that are looking for work right now. And the story, just being inspired to take the next step and follow your dream rather than doing what you think you have to do to get out of a situation. I think that story, that part alone, is inspiring for people.
it's a hard time right now. A lot of really, really capable and qualified people who have never been out of work are out of work now for the very first time and are doing a lot of soul searching and having to do that guerrilla marketing out there for themselves. And so I'm really sympathetic towards that. I know that when you are job searching, especially when you're job searching as an unemployed job seeker, it's hard and it really can wreak havoc on your emotional state. And so I'm sympathetic towards people in those circumstances.
So when you think back on your career, when you pivoted into this particular role, you worked for a company for a while, right? As a recruiter?
My last job, I was a recruiter for Nationwide Children's Hospital, which is the largest children's hospital in the country.
And when you were there, or when you were getting that job, what was that moment like? Was there a moment when you first started with that job that you realized this is what you were meant to do?
No. We had just moved to Columbus, Ohio. My husband's job took us to Columbus, and I had taken a break from employment. I'd had a job that I really enjoyed in St. Louis, Missouri, but I was traveling 50% of the time, and we had our first child, and my husband's job was really high stakes, high pressure. He worked a lot, and we needed someone to be more flexible, and so that person was me. And being a stay-at-home mom for 18 months was not an easy job for me. I'm a doer and I was going crazy, to be honest. It just was hard.
Right. I mean, based on what you just, your first story of moving to a big city and going to college and how much you enjoyed the time of being with people. I can't even imagine being home alone with a baby in a new town.
A baby who cried all the time, who's a lovely, delightful child now, but was a really, really difficult infant. And so there was that 18-month period where I really needed to be, I dreamed of being back in the workplace. We moved to Columbus and I was kind of waiting until that moment to go back into the workplace, that move, that transition. And we knew no one in Ohio, so it was a completely cold market for me. And so I did what I teach my clients to do. I navigated the hidden job market. I built my target company list. I had networking meetings. I ended up getting a job at Nationwide, and I'm really grateful for that job. I had an awesome boss who essentially created this position for me. She knew I was a mom. She really respected, you know, my work-life balance choices, but it wasn't like my dream job. It was just a great job with great people. And it was a job that I really enjoyed, but it wasn't the most stimulating or challenging job that I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. Was there a point there that you were just, that you understood that your boss was exactly the right person for you at that point? Because I know that when I shifted jobs, every time I shifted jobs, there were moments where I would realize I was in the wrong place or I was in the right place, even if it wasn't long-term.
Yes. My third day of work, she looked over at me and she just said, "Hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee." And she just took me and she bought me a cup of coffee. And somebody, I recently read a post that said a boss should buy you coffee. And that so resonated. She just cared enough about me that she bought me a cup of coffee and she wanted to know how I was doing. She knew that I had stayed at home for some time and that my daughter was at daycare for the first time and knew that that was going to be a little bit of a transition. And so I felt like she cared about me as a whole person. She cared about me and my family, and she cared about me at work. And so I knew I was in the right job at the right time.
Oh, I love that. So did you ever tell her that?
Oh, I tell her all the time that she's just a wonderful. I no longer live in Ohio, but I love Jeannie. She's a great person.
You know, I would love for all of our listeners who are bosses right now to pay attention to this story. Seriously, pay attention to the story, because I'm guessing you were always a hard worker. You always would have done the best you could do. But I have to say, I know when a boss cares about me, I work even harder. It's more important to me because I have this sense of responsibility to somebody who cares about me more so than a responsibility to a job.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. I mean, it was a job for me. It wasn't like it was rocket science, but I loved Jeannie and I loved our team. And so I wanted to work really hard for her. And she also trusted me. Like there was never a time where I didn't feel like I had her trust. She let me work from home some days. She let me, you know, leave early knowing that I would work hard in the evenings. She just was a phenomenal person because she knew that I was a hard worker and that I would get the job done mm-hmm. no matter when I made that happen.
So bosses out there, pay attention to this. She took her out for coffee on her third day and asked her questions about how she was doing. I can't express how important that is to me to make sure our listeners hear that message. And I know my friend Heather Younger, who wrote Leaders with Heart, she has The Art of Caring Leadership was her first book, and she is about to publish another one in spring of 2021. And her podcast is all about that, what caring leaders do and why that matters. And so I think it's really important to just keep kind of hammering away at that to remind people of that. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not a boss, you can lead from other places, no matter where you sit. And it could have been a colleague that said, "Hey, I know you're new here. How are you doing? Let's go get a cup of coffee." It didn't have to be your boss, but it helps that it was the boss.
Mm-hmm. It did.
Oh, that's great. So when did you go straight from that job to being self-employed?
I did. I started dipping my toe in the water while I was at that job and into self-employment and didn't fully go head first until after I left that position.
So you had the side hustle that many of us had. I mean, I had a side hustle for like 20 years before I went off on my own. So tell me about that. What was that like when you were doing the side hustle and then you decided that you were ready? What was it in the side hustle that made you realize you were onto something?
So I think that maybe other moms who are listening to this, who are experiencing similar feelings during the pandemic, may relate to this. But, you know, my husband was still working a lot of hours at this time, and a lot of the family responsibilities were on me with my kids. I just had my second child, and the cost of childcare went up exponentially. It was, I think, either $143 or $148 a day just to send my kids to daycare. Wow. And then on top of that, you know, you have to pay for sick care. So if your kids are sick and you still have to go to work, you have to pay somebody to come to your house. And so it cost me on average around $175 just to go to work, just to get out the door a day to go to work. And I started feeling like, man, is this worth it? Am I getting out of this job what I'm putting into it? And I already mentioned earlier in the podcast, I love the people that I worked with. I didn't necessarily love the job. And so when I was doing that mental calculation of what it was taking from me to go to work, it made it easier for me to just say, you know what, I'm going to go all in on myself and hedge a bet on myself. I knew I didn't want to go back to working or being a full-time stay-at-home mom. I'd done that and that wasn't for me, mm-hmm. but I felt like I was really onto something. And even if I didn't make a lot of money, I wasn't making a lot of money in my other job because it cost me so much to get there. So it was kind of mm-hmm. that, why not moment. And I had full support of my husband, who was just really kind to me during the season. And I'd been really kind to him during his seasons of transition. So we'd really been mutually supportive of each other's career moves and career choices. So I started, went head first, and it's been a wild ride.
Oh, yes. I hear you on that. So tell me when the first time was that you breathed, that you went, okay, I got this. This is cool. I'm doing the right thing. Was it a time that you got to spend with your kids, or was it a client?
I feel like I'm taking deep breaths regularly where I'm crossing different hurdles in life, whether it be as a mom or as a career business owner. Like I feel like I'm still crossing these major hurdles. And we moved last summer. And so that was another big hurdle to cross. So I feel like I've been at this, like, I've been running a marathon in some ways of having young kids and trying to go 100% for my kids, moving, being in a pandemic, helping my clients. It's been a lot, but it's also been incredibly rewarding. And I say this with just 100% like genuineness. Like, I feel so incredibly honored to be doing the work that I'm doing right now. I know I'm not a frontline worker, and I think people who are on the front lines are absolutely the heroes during this pandemic, but I feel really honored to be playing a part in helping people get back to work and better position themselves for opportunities. And I've told people before, like, I feel like I've been training for the Olympics my whole life, and now I'm competing in the Olympics because I'm helping all these job seekers get back to work. And it really is just like so such an honor.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I feel the same way in the work that I do to help people prepare for interviews. And I have a client appointment next week with a client who has gotten a couple of interviews and they haven't panned out. And she just wants some tips to make her stories resonate more and connect more with the interview team that she's going to be working toward over the next few months. So I hear you. It is an honor when somebody trusts you with that important aspect of their lives. When shortly after I left my full-time job to do my work full-time, I remember one day, I have strategic and activator as my top two strengths. And for our listeners, that means that when I know I need to get from point A to point B, I immediately have a route in my head. Like, I don't even think about it. It just comes so naturally and so instinctively. I immediately have the route. The downside is that I step forward into it because of this activator, and I have this sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And I remember for the first few months of being self-employed, having this constant gut-wrenching kind of feeling. Like, you know, when your stomach is just roiling, you wake up in the morning and you just know you have so much to do and your stomach's just like, you know, and uncomfortable. And I woke up with that sense of urgency every day for months, trying to decide what to do next to get my business going. And I remember one day I was getting my certification to be a disadvantaged business enterprise here in the state of Montana, DBE, which allows me to get certain government contracts without competition. They can sole source with me for certain things for what I provide, trainings and stuff. So I had this piece of paper that I had to have notarized, and I forgot that it had to be notarized before I dropped it off at the office that they were going to process my application. And I stopped at this bank that I've been going to for years. I walked in, and again, I have the sense of urgency. I have an appointment in an hour. I have to be there. And I walked in and I asked the guy if there was a notary on that could quickly take this on. And it's like, yes, I'm a notary. Just give me a couple minutes to finish up with this other client. So he goes into his office and I'm sitting there waiting and I'm having this, my stomach's just grinding and I'm so frustrated. It seems like it's taking forever. And then this was my moment of like as some people would call it, a come to Jesus moment. It was this moment where I leaned back. It was this time of year. And I leaned back in the chair and I took this deep breath. And I thought, my sense of urgency isn't his sense of urgency. And he is doing me a favor by notarizing this without an appointment at the last second. I need to calm down. Because where is this even coming from? I'm not in a hurry. This application can go in anytime this week. Why am I doing this to myself? And I still think about the chair I was sitting in, what this guy looked like in his office, head down, finishing up a phone call with a client. I can visualize myself in that moment. And every time I get that sense of anxiety again, that sense of urgency, I take myself back to that moment and think, okay, this is my own. I'm putting this on myself. This doesn't belong to anybody else. So I guess that's where I was going with this. Was there a moment where you're like, okay.
You know, I'll say that the flexibility of being an entrepreneur has pros and cons. And I have experienced some of those pros and cons where I have a full day of client meetings and client work, and, you know, kids get sick. And my younger daughter has asthma, and she unfortunately had a lot of bad spouts of asthma when she was younger. And those days were, when she was sick, she was really sick, and I needed to just clear my calendar. And as a brand new entrepreneur, I felt so much guilt for having to cancel on people or delay our appointments, and felt so awful for not being able to keep my word or keep my appointment, but also just love the time that I got to spend caring for my younger daughter as she, you know, was sick with asthma and coughing and really sick. So there's just been a balance, which mm-hmm. I think that a lot of moms experience as well of, you know, when you're working, you can't give 100% to both work and your family 100% of the time. And I have to give myself permission to give a little bit more to one sometimes and a little bit more to others other times. But as someone who is a little bit of a perfectionist, I want to give 100% to both all the time. And that's not going to happen.
Right. It's not possible. Do you ever remember a client just being super gracious to you when you had to cancel and saying, of course,
yes,
your kid comes first.
Yes. I've been so surprised by these people all the time. I mean, it's not that I've been late to calls before with senior vice presidents of large companies and just felt awful. And they were the most gracious and understanding. It's been fun during the pandemic to see the human side of people because everybody's working from home. Everybody's in their home offices. I've had calls with people who I would view as very important people, and their kids have interrupted our calls. Their spouse has come in the room. I mean, we're all mm-hmm. kind of living this bubble life together. And it's been cool to see that human side of people.
Definitely. There are two things that popped into my head as you were saying that. One is when you've had that experience, you know that that's generally the way people are going to respond. And I would encourage you when you feel that sense of responsibility, clearly you have a very strong sense of responsibility when you have to cancel or postpone a call, that you can count on them to be gracious. And you would be just as gracious if it was the other way around. And so being able to take that step back and as I have that sense of urgency, take that deep breath and give yourself that same grace that they're giving you. Mm-hmm. I would really encourage you to think about that and other listeners who have that same sense of responsibility and letting somebody down. People are often gracious and not just in a pandemic. If you explain, and if you're a little bit vulnerable with them, my kid is sick today and I'm going to have to postpone, as opposed to making an excuse or just saying, I have to postpone, that acknowledging that human side, the complexity of our humanity, whether or not we're in a pandemic. The other thing that popped into my head was, I love what you said about is seeing that human side of people because so many of us are working from home and interruptions from family and fur babies. And I was thinking about that a few months ago when I was working with the team, coaching them, doing the StrengthsFinder coaching. And I said, people are inviting you into their homes right now. You are seeing a side of them you never would see because they're inviting you into their homes. And so there is a different sense of connection now. Even though we're so disconnected, when we do connect, I think it's a different kind of connection now than it ever was before.
It is and it isn't. I still feel like people are missing that water cooler conversation.
Definitely.
And that gives you a lot of buffer with people. When you see them day in and day out at the office and you can connect with them at the coffee or, you know, while you're walking to get lunch, that really builds some goodwill and rapport. And we have been doing this work from home thing for a really long time. And so I do feel like some of that goodwill is you know, waning with people, but at the same time, I do see your point about being able to see people's houses and just how cool it is to get that more personal human touch.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more that it's giving people a different perspective on each other, mm-hmm. Because they're inviting you into their homes. And yes, I absolutely agree, especially people that thrive in those environments of having other people around, like you, like me. One of my coaching clients has relator as her number one strength, which means that she has to have meaningful relationships every day. And she misses going in early and seeing the people that she would see every day. She misses that connection, and it's painful. This is not something that is replaceable.
Right.
These Zoom calls are, no matter how much more connected we are by seeing people out of their work environment, there is nothing like being face to face and all of the stimulation that we get from that, that we're not even conscious of. So agreed. I think that there is definitely a different kind of relationship being built because of that ability to see into people's homes and experience them with their families in a way that we haven't before. Mm-hmm. In most cases. Of course, I live in a small town, so everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows your kids. But that's kind of a funny story. When I worked for the city, my younger son in seventh grade decided he wanted his hair white.
Oh my gosh. He has
brown hair like mine, and he just wanted it white. Some of his friends had done purples and oranges, whatever. He wanted his hair white. So we spent 3 weekends in a row in the bathroom bleaching out his hair. And it was finally white. Well, one day, one of my friends from Parks and Rec came to me. She said, "Oh, I waved to your son. He was riding his bike to school." And I said, "Which one?" She said, "The one with the white hair." And I said, "How could you tell?" She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Wasn't he wearing his helmet?" And she said, "Oh, don't tell him that I was the spy. Don't tell him I told you." So when we got home that afternoon, that evening, I got home from work and I said, "Max, why weren't you wearing your helmet?" He goes, "How did you know?" So it is a small town.
I grew up in a small town just like that. My mom would know everything I did in high school before I got home. She had spies everywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. So it is a different perspective, seeing people's children and their fur babies and seeing them in that environment. I have to say, I was kind of surprised the other day when I was working with a coaching client and her cat kept sitting on the keyboard and kept getting like right in her face. And this is somebody that if I only saw her in the office, if we had only met in her office to talk through these coaching questions, I would never have seen that side of her, that she would allow this cat. She's like super professional and really, really bright. And this cat was walking all over her, literally.
It's so funny. You know, I never thought that I would have close connections with people that I only know remotely. And I've been surprised by the fact that I do feel really connected to people that I've never met. In fact, I have an assistant who I've worked with for a year and a half, and I've never met her. And I consider one of my dearest friends, and we talk daily, and she's phenomenal, but we've never laid eyes on each other. Isn't that just a sign of the times?
It really is. It really is. Well, and it's why I started the No Longer Virtual Conference almost 5 years ago, because mm-hmm. I had met these amazing people on LinkedIn and I wanted to meet them face to face. It was just this, I was compelled to start this event. And the first one was in 2017 in Atlanta, and 23 of us were together in that room. And none of us, well, I had met one of these people face to face because I happened to visit Washington, D.C. a few months before and we connected for lunch. But other than that, I had never met any of these people face to face. And you can read, if you just search hashtag NLV or NLV Atlanta, you can read all of these people's blog posts about the event about how it felt more like a reunion, like a college reunion, than the first time meeting these people. There were hugs and, I mean, yeah, I hear you. You can connect very deeply.
Do you feel like people are the same when you met people at this no longer virtual conference and you've maybe been reading their content for a year or 5 years or however long, and you kind of feel like you know them, but when you met them in real life, did you feel like you were they authentic? Were they really who they were online?
99% of them were. Okay. There was one. The reason I say that, I love that you just asked, you just turned the tables. You're asking me this question about this story. It was so funny when I met this one person that gives this persona of just being so together and confident. And then face to face, he was like shy. It was really surprising to me. So shy, like, and awkward. But online, there's no awkwardness. It's like, this is what I do. I'm really good at it. There's no, so yeah. But I would say that most of, and it may be that these are the people who we attract into our lives.
Yeah.
So you aren't going to attract somebody into your life that won't be the same person in person that you experience them online. It's just not, that's just not how it works.
Yeah. Sign me up for 2021. That sounds like a really fun conference.
Well, yes, absolutely. I'm actually planning it for June 10th and 11th, 10th and 11th in Helena, in Montana.
Oh, wow.
So this will be year five. This is year five. It's kind of a big deal to make it to 5 years as an event planner. And last year we were in Chicago. This year, we're not out of 2020 yet. This year, March 11th and 12th, I think. No, 12th and 13th was in Chicago. And I had 40 people registered and we had 20 in the room. They kept canceling for those last 5 days before because everything was shutting down. And people couldn't leave. I had a couple that were supposed to be coming from Madison, Wisconsin, and their campus said that if they left, that they would have to quarantine themselves for 2 weeks after they got back. So they couldn't do that and not get paid. So we had a whole bunch of cancellations, but we had 20 of us in the room, and it was extraordinary. Yeah. It was extraordinary. And so at the end of that, as we always do, we do a debriefing to talk about what to do if we're going to do it again next year, what people would want, where they might want to have it, what kinds of sessions they would be looking for. And of course, throughout the year, we kind of fine tune that. But there was an overwhelming response that they wanted to have it in Montana. They wanted to have an excuse to come to this beautiful state. So typically we do it like in February. This year it was in March because it was in Chicago and I didn't want to risk the weather in February. Now I'm questioning that decision. But we couldn't really do that in Montana that time of year because the weather is just too questionable. So we're doing it in June this year, 2021, June, NLV, Montana.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, I'll sign you up. You'll probably want to bring your family because it's pretty amazing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me one more story. I would love to wrap this up with one more of your stories because I've told far too many of mine during this episode. So tell me, what was that?
I said, what kind of story do you want to hear?
I would love to hear a story. You just told a story at the beginning about a meaningful experience that you had with a client, the doctor, that went to the Caribbean for medical school. Who is another client that you might have thought you failed with, but then came back? Like, I think those stories of perceived failure can give us a lot of insight into what we really do and who we are.
Yeah. I've got a good one that comes right to mind. So I had a client and I'll call him Chris because I want to protect his identity. And Chris was really eager to work with me, like very excited to work with me. And right off the get-go was like an energy level 25 on a scale of 1 to 10. Yeah.
He's a maximizer.
Yeah. He was jazzed to work with me and he did all of his homework the very first session and was ready for session number two. And when we got on the phone for session number two, I think he was a little disappointed that, you know, things weren't happening, that he didn't already have a job. And
after one session,
you know, he wanted to be in a new situation quickly. And he wasn't in a place where he could wait 3 to 6 months to really lay the foundation and do all the steps he needed to do to land a good job. Additionally, he was making a career pivot and he was looking to do work that was different than he was doing before. And so he was going to have to do a lot of networking. I knew he could do it. I knew he had the skill set to do it, but it was going to be a longer road. And I had to set realistic expectations. So session number two was setting realistic expectations. He was okay. He did his homework. By the time we got to session four, he was mad at me. He was not happy with the direction that things were going. And he was very frustrated. He felt like this was, you know, baloney. And I had kind of dragged him through this process. And at the end of our call, I said to him, I said, Chris, I know you're going to land this job that you want, but I know you're going to do it through your network. And you keep applying to jobs online that are cold, and you're not hearing back from people, but every time you have a conversation with someone, something good happens. Every time you connect with someone from your past, or you reach out to someone at a new company and you get a meeting, things start happening for you. So double down on that, invest in networking. And he kind of said something snarky and we got off the phone and that was the end. Like we did not finish our time together. He didn't finish our final session and I didn't hear from him. And I thought that I had really disappointed him. And, you know, as a coach, I'm always worried about a bad review in the back of my mind. Is this going to just be bad for
me? Is this going to bite me in the butt? Exactly.
Yes. So I didn't hear from him. And it was about 2 months ago. So a year later, I got this random out of the blue call from him. And he said, "Hey, I just want to call and apologize. Our last call didn't end well, and I'm sorry for the way I treated you on the phone. I just want you to know you're right. About a month after we stopped working together, I had this random encounter with a friend from my network who said that she knew of an opportunity, and she introduced me to the hiring manager. The hiring manager just did this random phone call with me. It wasn't a real interview and asked me what I wanted to make at the end of the call. I threw out a number, not thinking this was a real interview. And he offered me the job. I'm doing my dream job, making more money than I thought I would be. And it wasn't even a real interview. And so I'm just really grateful and sorry that I disrespected you." And that was it took a lot for him to do that. And it was a really,
it did. Oh, I love that story. That is a perfect way to wrap this up. I love that. So for listeners, when you hire somebody to do this kind of work for you, with you, you have to know that they have a plan, that it isn't random that they're making you jump through these hoops or that they're asking you to do things differently from how you might have anticipated things getting done. So be patient and definitely, if you have a coach that's not working with you, that you don't feel like you trust, definitely end it before you get into a bad position with them. But in the meantime, when you hire somebody to do this work with you, you're going to have to be patient. It doesn't happen overnight. Oh, that's excellent. What a great story. And that is a big deal for him to reach out afterward and apologize.
Months later. Even months after he landed his job, I think he was just in a place where he was being reflective and he was thinking about how lucky he was and how much he really enjoys his job. Mm-hmm. And he's a good guy. I think that's what was so hard about that last conversation that didn't end well is that I really liked him and I really felt like we had this great connection but I wasn't working on his timeline. And so I understand how he was disappointed, but it was great to hear from him.
Well, I think also when you reflect back on where he was at that point, I can tell you that when I was in a job that was really a bad fit for me, where I was really unhappy, I projected that onto the people that were trying to help me. Mm-hmm. So he was likely projecting that discomfort of where he was onto you. And I was in a hurry to get out of a job. It was probably 7 or 8 years ago. I remember feeling that same way, that I was so eager to do something else that when I interviewed for a position that was perfect for me, and I was so excited and super high level energy, and when I didn't get the job, I was filled with despair. And so I'm thinking about him from that perspective and that understanding. And that's, I'm sure, where he was at that time. So you're right. He is likely a really good person, and you probably did have a really good connection. He was not in a good place at that point. I think we have to offer ourselves that compassion, and also, of course, the others. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah, we've all been there, right? In a job that we hate, where we're not being treated well, or we think that we have this perception that it's bad, really horrible, even if it's not as bad as, you know, somebody else might think it was.
I had a boss that used to make me go walk his dog at his house. That was really humble. I know.
That's not okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. Sarah, this has been such a pleasure, as I knew it would be. And I so appreciate your taking the time to chat with me about your stories and about what the wonderful work you do. If our listeners want to get a hold of you, what are the best ways to reach you?
Thank you for asking. They can find me on my website, www.briefcasecoach.com, or they can find me on LinkedIn. I share new content weekly and would love to engage with them there.
Absolutely. And just for our listeners, I will also have those links in the blog post associated with this podcast to make sure that you can reach Sarah when you're ready to take that next pivotal move in your career, or just to connect and watch out for her content, because it is really good stuff. It's some of the only content that I read on these topics. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. The book of the same title is now available, and the audiobook version will be released in November 2020. If you're ready to uncover your stories and learn to uncover the stories of the people around you to create stronger connections and healthier communities, visit elkinsconsulting.com. And while you're visiting the website, you can learn more about the book and the work we do to improve communication among teams and through our one-to-one coaching. Thank you.